People do take this stuff seriously. Look what's happening in the legislative session. Twin Cities News Talk. John Justice, producer Robbie, your talkbacks via the iHeartRadio app. And joining me in studio is lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. Do you have a racist pantry? Are you guilty of pantry porn?
No, I don't think so. But, you know, was it a couple years ago when I think with the effort to take Woodrow Wilson's name off buildings at Princeton because, you know, he was an avowed racist. I was my opening. I said, well, you know, he did pass the income tax. So maybe we should take, maybe that's racist. We should get rid of that.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll never go that route.
No. That was a bridge too far.
That'll never happen. I do appreciate the fact, I don't even know how long ago the Nancy Pelosi ice cream thing was, but boy, that really stuck.
It was the designer ice cream. It was like expensive ice cream. Yeah.
Yeah, she had a lot of it too.
Mm-hmm.
651-989-5855. We got a lot of stuff to talk about with Jeff O'Brien. Let's go and talk to Dan, though, in southern Minnesota. Wants to talk about pantry porn. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
What are your thoughts on this?
So quickly, what I wanted to say is the target audience for these videos are people that are going to want to organize their pantry and can afford to have that stuff. So the people that are supposedly that are going to be offended aren't watching these videos anyway. So the whole point of the article is to make people feel guilty
right.
that do this stuff. It's not to protect the people that can't afford it. That's my point is... The people that can't afford it aren't watching these TikTok videos anyway, and if they are, they should be doing something else.
Well, and to, you know, and to paint with an even, you know, an even broader brush, it kind of goes back to your feelings should never be disrupted on anything. If somebody could view this who doesn't have a nice pantry or doesn't can't afford one, right, and their feelings get hurt, therefore your part of the problem. I mean, that again, but I'm painting with a much broader brush here. So, Jeff O'Brien, a couple things I wanted to ask you about before we dive into the Minnesota bill legalizing marijuana, getting the rewrite. And I should have reached out to you before, but this actually works that we got you in studio now. With the passing of Bud Grant, you know, I was following, as I do, on your Facebook, and you had some comments on there. I know you've gone on some other shows and talked about it, but you had some photos with him. You're a big Vikings fan, so I'm curious just your thoughts on the passing of Bud Grant, and then also some of what's happening with the your thoughts on what's happening with the team and some of the moves that are being made.
Well, with Bud, and so I've got, you know, for those that don't know, I have some of his former players as clients. And so, you know, part of my weekend and early part of the week was just reaching out to them because, you know, he was a big part of their lives. And just, you know, a lot of them were on TV last weekend and doing interviews. And it's funny, I put pictures up of some of my clients with him. I never took a picture with them because you'd be in the, there were so many times I'd be around him and you're just like in the moment and just kind of like, I'm just going to like enjoy this.
Sure.
Like there was one time. I was at a signing and they were backstage and he was there with Neil Broughton. Of course, Neil Broughton, you know, had been on the Miracle on Ice 1980 Olympic gold medal team. And they're just chit-chatting about duck hunting. And I'm like, I'm just going to enjoy it. Let's just listen to this, right? It's like, you can't just, can I stop and take a picture?
No. Right.
It's like you're watching an Olympic hero, Minnesota native Olympic hero, and Bud Grant just casually talking about duck hunting, you know, those kinds of things. So, no, it's going to be, it's different. I mean, he's been so much a part of the franchise ever since he got here in 1967, even up until recently. So, you know, I think it was, Chuck Foreman, who's a good friend and client of mine, former Viking running back, did an interview on one of the TV stations. And he was saying that when they'd go play in Green Bay at Lambeau Field, you could feel Vince Lombardi in the stadium.
Right.
And he said, that's what's going to be like with Bud. He won't be there, but he will be there.
Right. And that was the next question that I had was, you know, if you could compare it in terms of legacy, how strong that legacy will be. And I think you just made the comparison, the proper comparison there with Vince Lombardi. Your quick thoughts on all the changes that have been happening with the team.
You know, it's a business. I think it needed to happen.
Yeah.
You know, this is, in my opinion, it's reminiscent of when Denny Green took over and had a lot of veterans on some pretty heavy contracts. And that was before the salary cap era. And he got a little flack his first year for jettisoning some of those players. And he ended up winning the division that year. So they're getting younger. They had to free up some cap space. We'll see what happens from here. But you know, this was what happens when a team they had a nice record last year, but they didn't do right. well at all in the playoffs.
No,
so, you know, it's tough to see a guy like Adam Thielen go, but I'll predict it here. I think if Aaron Rodgers ends up with the Jets, as he announced yesterday as his intention to do so, I would not be surprised if you see Adam connect with Rodgers, because why at this point in his career, why not catch passes from a Hall of Fame sure. quarterback? So we'll see.
All right, one more item, and then we'll dive into marijuana. And I've thought a lot about you over the course of the past few days as it relates to the collapse of the Silicon Valley Bank. I know you work with a lot of businesses, and you know you can feel free to give a little bit more background on that. Sort of a larger overarching question is, there seems to be this big question mark on, is this going to be indicative of a larger collapse? The initial talk when Silicon Valley Bank collapsed from over the weekend was, you know, contagion, a run on these regional banks that have these venture capitalists. Since then, I know there's been a lot of global market moves, and there seems to be a further concern as it relates to the economy as a whole. So big picture and then smaller picture as it relates to what happened with SVB.
Well, you know, I work with some banks. I'm on the advisory board for a bank, so I'm aware of some of the stuff going on this week. And I represent a lot of businesses that, you know, startup businesses too, that, you know, need loans from time to time. you know, there's a program that the Small Business Administration has. They have several different loan programs where the SBA is basically guaranteeing the loan, right? So there's options out there for small banks to do financing for these new and emerging companies in a safe way. So as I understand what's with SVB and some of these other banks is, they did some things that were, they took on too much risk. And you'd think at this point in 2023, you would have learned your lesson if you were around during the real estate crash, because a lot of banks did some very risky real estate development loans, and some of those banks are no longer around. So, you know, the bank clients that I work with, the folks I've talked to locally, I haven't seen a concern because they weren't in these risky investments that put the, you know, money at risk for the bank. But you know, anytime that you introduce, it's anytime a bank fails, it introduces this kind of uncertainty in the market. So we'll just have to see where it goes. I see today there was a breaking news, I think, from the Wall Street Journal that Credit Suisse is going to tap their emergency funds to kind of shore things up. So I don't think we're at 2008 yet.
Right.
But you just never know. We'll see. But again, I a lot of the banks I'm talking to, they say we're fine. We didn't do any of this risky investment stuff that some of these others did.
Yeah, I get concerned when it comes to proper context on these types of stories, because you know you can't really follow what the mainstream media is covering. You know, they're doing what they do. You know, their job is to kind of hype it up further, you know, and to get people watching, and you get people watching if you're showing a lot of concern. You know, really when it comes down to it, I just think, okay, does this have an impact on me? And I think if you look at a larger sort of economic collapse, you know, things like 401ks and stuff like that is usually where my eyes go to. I worry much less about something happening to my larger bank. I think the bigger banks are, you know, fairly okay. And, you know, even if there is a danger there, you still have a level of insurance at that $250,000. So unless you're a business owner that has a lot of money tapped into that. But again, I think those larger institutions, my understanding is most of those are going to be fine regardless of what happens. On a bigger picture level, it's just it's hard to get to the truth of all this stuff. That's the thing that I find most frustrating.
I think the bigger concern, John, is that the federal government, you know, there was a lot of, you know, a lot of editorials against a bailout of these couple of banks that have failed,
right,
for fear that the federal government was just going to do what they did during the beginning at COVID. Hey, we'll just print money and you know, and throw it around. That's just going to make the inflation situation worse.
Yep. All right, let's go here. Legalization to legislation to legalize recreational marijuana for adults in Minnesota underwent a major rewrite on Tuesday with additional new language to regulate and protect the state's burgeoning industry in low-potency edibles and drinkables. Last time I think we had you on, we were talking about this very issue and what this legalization of marijuana was actually going to do to a lot of these breweries who are now selling these THC-infused beverages. So what can you tell us about the changes to the legalized marijuana bill? Is this better? Is this going to be better for those breweries, some of your clients as well, right?
I think, John, in terms of, I think there's really two issues here. There's the what's happening with the legalization of adult use cannabis, and then what is the impact on what's already legal under the 2018 Farm Bill, and what was legalized last year in terms of these hemp-derived THC consumables, particularly the beverages that the breweries were putting out, the non-alcoholic beverages. So in terms of these amendments that came through in the Minnesota Senate this week for the what we call the low potency type products, those hemp derived products, it was a good week. There were things that happened that where they're going to have a separate licensing regime for those businesses. So the bottom line being, up until prior to these amendments, there was some language in there that these beverages had to be made in a separate facility and everything.
Right.
Basically, the breweries were not going to be able to do them anymore. That appears to be, at least in the Senate version, back in the bill, the author, who's the chair of the House Commerce Committee, indicated that they will be included in the House version when the Commerce Committee picks it up next week. But again, time will tell. On the side of cannabis, I am concerned. You know, there's a lot of talk about other states that have legalized, and there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. California is one that's held out as the wrong way to do it. Washington State is one that's held out as the right way to do it. Washington State has a requirement you have to be a resident to get the license. At this point, I'm not aware that that's a requirement. There's a concern, at least among some of the folks that I'm working with, that this is just going to open the door for out-of-state cannabis companies to come in here. And so I am concerned on the cannabis side that those in power are not focused enough on looking at, you know, we're introducing a new regulated industry into Minnesota. How do we make it work in a way that creates businesses and jobs and opportunities and tax revenue here in Minnesota versus just this, we want to check this one off the box too, as all these, you know, all these different bills that we're rolling through. So I think something will pass. I am also of the belief that I think that they'll probably be back here next year and subsequent years dealing with unintended consequences because they didn't get it right.
Is it better for the breweries right now that are making these THC-infused beverages? Is it better for them at the moment without having the recreational aspect of it legalized?
I think the problem is right now with what was passed last year is you have a number of cities that used their ability to impose these moratoriums, these one-year moratoriums under the auspices of zoning, you know, looking at the zoning requirements, right? So you have this patchwork regulatory scheme where it might be one community, it might be legal, the other community, it might not be legal. And I know in talking with my clients are split on that. Some say they're okay, they can live with that, but other, you know, some of these clients would be like, yeah, this is, we want a uniform statewide law. This is how the breweries do it with like the tap rooms and the cocktail rooms and for the distilleries, is the state says they're legal. And it's up to the city to create the, you know, the actual license requirements, right? I don't know that just maintaining the status quo is going to be the good thing for them, mm-hmm. because, you know, they still have to deal. There's still issues. Right now, there's a problem. Liquor stores can't sell those beverages. The Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division has taken the position that there's a list of products, non-alcohol products that liquor stores can sell. And it's done because they don't, you know, it was kind of detente between the grocery stores selling liquor right. and the liquor stores selling food, right? So there's basically liquor stores can sell, right now can only sell things really that are used as mixers or, you know, garnishes for alcoholic drinks.
Right.
And it seemed to be kind of insane that you have this beverage that you couldn't sell to somebody who was, you know, under a certain age. I'm like, well, you've got a business that they check IDs as part of their thing. So wouldn't it, from a public safety standpoint, wouldn't it be better to let those businesses sell these versus the 16-year-old cashier at, you know, some grocery store?
Right.
So that is one of the fixes that needs to happen for what's already legal is the liquor stores need to have the ability to sell those. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I've always said, full disclosure, I'm in support of legalization of adult use cannabis, in part because I've got a bunch of clients that are,
sure.
you know, a lot of business clients that want to do it. And so, yeah, do I stand to make money off it? Sure. But I also come from a regime of, you know, knowing the history of what we did on alcohol prohibition and realizing that there might be a better way to approach cannabis the same way that we, you know, have. How things were adjusted when prohibition didn't work for alcohol.
We have a listener, Robbie, from Minneapolis, joins us. Good morning. Welcome to Twin Cities News Talk. John Justice, producer Robbie, and you're also on with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien.
Hey, Jeff O'Brien and John, thanks for having me on this morning. I just kind of see this whole thing as another level of the 3-2 hard liquor laws that they were running in Minnesota for so long.
Does it relate at all to that in your mind, Jeff?
Well, yeah. I mean, certainly the stuff that the products that were made legal last year have been jokingly referred to as 3-2 weed. I mean, they are certainly of a lower potency than what they're talking about legalizing now.
Right.
Right. By a factor of a lot. But I think that, you know, there's some out there that want to be in this game, in this industry without having to deal with the, you know, Section 280E marijuana taxes, the issues with, you know, with banking and insurance, because until the feds act on this, on the cannabis side, there are some structural impediments to operating this business. And so there are some that would say rather take the path of least resistance and just stay in the lane of what was made legal in the 2018 Farm Bill. But yeah, is it, I mean, yes, could it be considered 3-2? Yeah. So, you know, we're the only state that allows for 3-2 beer and 3-2 weed, but, you know, so be it.
We're special that way. We're special in a lot of ways.
Uh-huh.
The former House Majority Leader and then loser in the primary election for Hennepin County Attorney, Ryan Winkler, within the next few months, according to a story here that I have from the Minnesota Reformer, plans to launch Crooked Beverage Company, a business venture that sells THC-infused flavored beverages in retail locations. So last year, as we've been talking about, the legislature passed a bill legalizing the sale of low-dose THC food and beverages to people under 21. It was largely unnoticed by the public until the day before it went into effect on July 1st. Ryan Winkler was a big proponent of that at the time and actually went around and toured a lot of different places prior to his losing the primary election to Hennepin County Attorney. And now he's going to apparently go and open up his own business.
This, John, this is a problem. I have some clients that are extremely upset about this, in that they allowed him as a fact finder when Ryan Winkler authored the original adult use cannabis bill,
okay.
and was a proponent of it last year when he was in the state house. And he toured a number of facilities, including some of my clients, and was shown their operations. And so some of them, when this news broke, are extremely upset that he used that position as the author of this legislation to basically get an inside look at how these businesses run. And now he's out there saying, oh, I didn't intend to do this. I lost my race for county attorney, so I've just decided to go into this business. This is one thing, if it's not in the bill yet, and I don't believe it is, and this has been in legislation and in other types of legislation in the past, where somebody who authors the bill cannot profit from it for a period of years. I think when this goes to the House next week, and I don't know if it's, you know, if it's someone from the Democrat side or the Republican side, someone needs to speak up on this, and someone needs to put into this legislation some sort of a waiting period for those that were authoring it to be involved in it. Because this is, I mean, this just foments distrust in our elected officials when stuff like this happens. This is on par with, you know, them making decisions when they're trading stocks that they can, that, you know, when you hear a lot on the federal level, sure, about that. This I'm not going to comment on, he's going to call it crooked beverage, but I'm hearing a lot of feedback that there's a lot of noses out of joint over this.
Yeah, he equated it to a lawmaker who's employed as a physician not being able to practice medicine because they worked on healthcare legislation. He went on to say, I just don't think that's a standard that's reasonable or fair for former elected officials.
His profession going into the legislature was as an attorney. Okay, this is not the same thing as a doctor getting right, elected and then making and having a voice on healthcare legislation. This is someone who decided, I mean, what's next? Is he going to go get his contractor's license so he can help construct the new state office building? You know, this is what we shouldn't be about in Minnesota.
Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, anything else before I let you go this morning, sir?
I think we're good.
Thank you so much for the time, man. It was great seeing you.
Thanks for having me in.
Thanks for coming in.